It was 2:15 in the morning, July 29th, 2015, and the Climate Action Coalition, a group of climate activists from Portland, Oregon, had a flotilla of kayaks ready to launch. They were trying to stop the Fenica, an icebreaker, from going down the Willamette River to the Columbia, headed for the Arctic, to aid Shell Oil in drilling. The 381-foot ship had been sent to a Portland shipyard for repairs, which had been completed. But the timeline for drilling was tight, and delay would be a big problem for Shell. They had to pass under the St. John's Bridge, and that's where the coalition hoped to stop them. Just as the kayaktivists, as they were called, were preparing to launch their tiny crafts, this was a real David and Goliath moment, they noticed lights appearing on the bridge. First one, then more, and finally 13 lights in all. Surprising local organizers, Greenpeace National had put out a call for activists to come to Portland and stop the Fenica. 13 volunteers began rappelling themselves off a bridge 200 feet above the river, dangling there in midair in the darkness. The police arrived, but too late. And for the next 2 days, the whole world watched as these young volunteers hung there for 40 hours, much of the time in punishing heat, with their red and yellow banners blowing in the wind, blocking the Fenica. Shortly afterward, Shell announced that they were no longer planning to drill in the Arctic for economic reasons. And as you can imagine, because they realized they were going to be countered by activists at every turn. This story was recounted by Marilyn Sewell, the minister at First Unitarian in Portland, and she goes on to share her conversation at a post-action celebration with one of the young men who had suspended himself from the bridge. He was tanned, hair bleached by the sun, with piercing blue eyes. He told her he lived in New York, but when he got a call from Greenpeace to get on a plane at once and come to Portland for a direct action against Shell, he didn't think twice. Amazed, confounded, Marilyn asked him, "Why would you be willing to do this?" He looked at her incredulous and said, "We have to do something." Unitarian Universalist activist Tim DeChristopher became a hero in the environmental movement, Matthew McHale writes, after he successfully prevented over 100,000 acres of federal land from being leased for oil and gas drilling. He had originally intended to protest the auction of land leases, which had been challenged for not adhering to environmental regulations. But in the moment, he decided to join the auction and ended up derailing the whole thing by outbidding his competitors, although he had no actual money to support his bids. Despite the entire auction being later declared unlawful and therefore invalid, Tim was arrested and spent 2 years in prison for his act of civil disobedience. At his sentencing hearing, Tim said, "At this point of unimaginable threats on the horizon, this is what hope looks like. In these times of a morally bankrupt government that has sold out its promises, this is what patriotism looks like. With countless lives on the line, this is what love looks like, and it will only grow." Tim's spontaneous act not only saved that land and inspired countless others, but it also transformed him. As he said, "Principled action is the salvation of the soul. I may have to go to prison, but every day since that auction, I walk a little taller and I feel a little more free. We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. We have only begun to love the earth. Now, not all of us are going to feel called to dangle from a bridge or outbid oil and gas companies and go to prison in our pursuit of climate justice, but we know we must do something. Our planet is in peril. I started researching for this sermon last week, an article here, a TED talk there, and before I knew it, I was reading and watching everything I could get my hands on. Watched talk after talk, skimmed article after article, even watched a full-length movie on the topic. I didn't realize till after I forced myself to stop that I was looking for hope. I did find some, and I will share that with you, but I also found a lot of other things, heartbreaking, surprising, stomach-tightening. Our planet is in peril. Al Gore, in a recent TED talk, explained that the accumulated amount of man-made global warming pollution that is up in the atmosphere now traps as much extra heat as would be released by 400,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every day, 365 days a year. And all that extra energy is heating up the atmosphere. In the last 10 years, the extremely hot days are now more numerous than the cooler than average days. In fact, 150 times more common than they were just 30 years ago. We're having record-breaking temperatures. 14 of the 15 hottest years ever measured with instruments have been in this young century. That's a lot of numbers, so let me put it this way. It's getting hotter. But globally, 93% of all the extra energy is trapped in the oceans, and that has consequences. Like Super Typhoon Haiyan, which passed over areas of the Pacific much warmer than normal before it slammed into Tacloban as the most destructive storm ever to make landfall. Or Superstorm Sandy, which went over areas of the Atlantic much warmer than normal before slamming into New York and New Jersey, and I will add Rhode Island. And warmer oceans are evaporating much more water vapor. Average humidity worldwide has gone up, creating what Brazilian scientists call flying rivers, funnels of all that extra water vapor over land where storm conditions trigger these massive, record-breaking downpours. In 2015, in Houston, Texas, it rained for 2 days, 162 billion gallons, more than 2 days of full flow of Niagara Falls in the middle of the city, which was, of course, paralyzed. These record downpours are creating historic floods and mudslides. In Chile of the same year, warehouses and trucks were swept away, and in Peru just last month, unbelievable footage, maybe you saw it, of the floods and mud and people clamoring to get to safety. Every night on the TV news now, Gore quips, is like a nature hike through the book of Revelations. And then there are the droughts, the fires, the extinction crisis. We're in danger of losing 50% of all living species on Earth by the end of this century. Our planet is in peril, and we know we must do something. Yet, we live in an age in which the magnitude of denial and inaction are extraordinary. Although we've been hearing about climate change for decades, international attempts to address it have repeatedly fallen short. The Kyoto Deal in Japan in 1997, the 2009 agreement in Copenhagen, and we would be excused for feeling discouraged at the prospects of the Paris Agreement, which had been a light at the end of a long tunnel, but now hangs precariously in the balance. There are reasons for these challenges. Jonathan Chait writes in New York Magazine that climate change is a problem that politics is almost designed not to solve. Its costs lie mostly in a distant future, whereas politics is built to respond to immediate conditions. The solution to global warming requires coordination of scores of countries with wildly disparate economies and political structures. And unlike a threat of war, for example, there is no one galvanizing moment of clarity like Pearl Harbor was for World War II, when the urgency of action becomes instantly clear. Add to this the fact that in this country, climate change has somehow become associated with a liberal agenda. And in this era of political polarization and antagonism, Republicans put their reputation at risk when they take a stand and vote to take action to curb it. There is a fossil fuel lobby sowing climate doubt. And we find that those who are raising an alarm, like our own Senator Whitehouse, are having to go to heroic efforts to even begin to be heard. At an individual level, the predictions are upsetting. The idea that we are responsible is distressing. The science is hard to understand, and the problem can feel both distant and overwhelming all at the same time. I'm overwhelmed by now. I don't know if you are feeling that way. It's no wonder that we are all vulnerable to denial, whether that is denial that humans are causing this, or whether that's denial that there is anything that any one of us can actually do. But as we see research funding cut, troubling policies proposed, and good policies dismantled, all buoyed by these striking levels of doubt and denial, we realize we must do something. My friends, do not lose heart. Do not spend your spirit dry bewailing these difficult times. Especially, do not lose hope. There is hope. It's out there, and it's in here. There is hope. In that same TED talk I quoted earlier, Al Gore notes that the effectiveness of renewable energy sources has been rising dramatically. As he said, the best projections in the world 16 years ago were that by 2010, the world would be able to install 30 gigawatts of wind capacity. We beat that mark by 14 and a half times over. We see an exponential curve for wind installations now. With solar, the news is even more exciting. The best projections 14 years ago were that we would install 1 gigawatt per year by 2010. When 2010 came around, we beat that mark by 17 times over. Last year, we beat it by 58 times over. This year, we're on track to beat it 68 times. The cost has come down 10% per year for 30 years, and projections say it's continuing to come down and will continue to do so. We are seeing an explosion of new investment in renewables, he said. Starting in 2010, investments globally in renewable electricity generation surpassed fossils. The gap has been growing ever since. An article from High Country News notes that clean energy is a jobs creator. In 2015, employment in the U.S. solar business grew 12 times faster than overall job creation. And I read recently that there is a new Republican group called the Green Tea Party. We could get into that. Which is standing up for climate change, addressing climate change. All of which is good. All of which is hopeful. And all of which is not enough. There is an urgency to this situation, and the key to moving things forward is us. All of us. Think globally, act locally, is the slogan coined by David Brower, founder of Earth Day. While policies at a national level may be distressing, there is a lot we can do and have been doing right here. Right here. Our Green Sanctuary program has been challenging us to live our ideals, setting standards, modeling behavior, and as Reverend Fred Small writes on Green Sanctuary, new behaviors reinforce new attitudes. Unitarian Universalists do not just go to church. We lead and live in many sectors of society, corporate, political, educational, social. What we learn in church ripples outward and touches everyone and everything we touch. And that goes from small to large, whether that is recycling our printer cartridges, making sure we give out green cleaning supplies at Sharing Locker, whether that's bringing our own plates and cups to the Seder meal to avoid using paper and plastic, or whether that is a long hoped for, long worked for, long sweated over ultimate success, like the installation of our brand new solar panels. An installation that is us living our values. An installation that, though it carried some risk, was voted in unanimously. An installation that, I understand, inspired as many as a dozen members of the congregation to get solar for their own houses or businesses. We are living our values, and it is rippling outward. I know a number of you went to the March for Science yesterday, and many here or elsewhere will be attending the climate rally next week. Individually and together, we are making our voices heard. Dan Kamen, an energy professor at UC Berkeley, was quoted on NPR saying that sometimes a hostile White House can energize regional efforts. I think there's no question states are going to be critical, he says. Just like under President Bush, we saw tremendous action at the state level. We can know we are part of a larger movement, part of a hopeful movement for change. There is no need to hide from bad news, Reverend Fred Small writes in a sermon on climate change. Indeed, it may be the very thing that provokes us to act in a way that makes our life more satisfying too. When we rise to a challenge, our strengths are activated and our sense of purpose switched on. There may be no guarantee that we will succeed in bringing about the changes we hope for, but the process of giving our full attention and effort can make us come alive. It can set us free. Whether that's dangling off a bridge, whether that's disrupting a land lease auction, whether that's joining a local movement, divesting from fossil fuels, supporting a carbon tax, hosting a forum, or a dozen other ways to make a difference, this is what hope looks like, Tim DeChristopher said. This is what love looks like. Every day I take principled action, I feel a little more free. My friends, do not lose heart. Struggling souls catch light from other souls who are fully lit and wanting to show it. We are needed. That is all we can know. I invite you to join together in a unison reading that you can find in your order of service. And I invite you to rise in body or in spirit. We can say this together. We must shine. We must shine now. This is the goal toward which we stretch, step by step, in our own time, at our own pace, as our beauty unfolds and our hearts open, we become gentler and more compassionate, yet brighter, more empowered, and fearless. We have been holding on, holding back, playing small, hiding our light under a bushel. Enough of that. It is time to let go. We are needed now, all of us. All of us together, all those who feel a calling to be who we are to the fullest. Make a difference, to give it all we've got.